didn't realize we had to wait 12 minutes to hear her singing the word eclipse. But there we go. Still good stuff. Rousing music. Good morning. We'll have an eclipse playlist. All good stuff coming up. Sometimes the word will come before the actual eclipse. Good morning and welcome. Thank you very much for being with us on this Monday, the 8th of April. A delight to have you with us and to be in your company on this beautiful Monday. And we have a lot to talk about. We have a great group to do it with. And I want to invite you to talk to us this morning. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. I'm going to do something just a teeny tiny little bit different. We want to take your letters on every subject, and whatever you want to write, fine. That's okay. But as always, but I would be interested if you would take this experiment of what you make of the eclipse, how you will be experiencing the eclipse. Mm-hmm. Do you care? Do you not care? Are you traveling? Do you know people who are just, you know, on $5,000 train trips to see the eclipse? And if you could just let us know that, I'd like to kind of go and pepper the conversation with that throughout the morning's discussion. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org is where you can send those notes. Let me introduce everybody to you. Jim Ketterer is here, senior fellow at Bard Center for Civic Engagement. Good morning, Jim. How are
Good
you?
Good morning. I'm well. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson, joins us. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
And last but certainly not least, Wall Street investment banker Mark Whitman. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Joe.
Nice to have you here as always.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Even on eclipse day, the traffic was a little bit heavy getting up here, but it wasn't unmanageable.
No, I guess yesterday on the Northway was quite packed, and the Adirondack Northway, which the extension of the New York Thruway if you don't go toward Buffalo. But both, I guess, those roads were quite full. We'll see what happens this afternoon. It'll be interesting to see how the traffic patterns are. I will tell you that as you're driving down those roads, and I'm sure the Thruway is the same way, you know, they're just like, don't park in the shoulder, keep it moving, don't. And they're very, you know, they don't want you to stop. Still want you to stop. So don't do that. Okay, it's finally happening. We talked about this. We've been talking about this for a long, long time. Not on this show, but we've been talking about this as a group, as a country, as a
global community.
Global community. Yes, exactly. That on April 8th, today, a total solar eclipse will sweep across North America, blocking out the sun momentarily for millions of viewers along a path stretching from northern Mexico to the state of Maine. Not since 2017 has the U.S. experienced a total solar eclipse, and we won't see another sweep across the nation until 2045. I hope I make it.
Yeah, same.
There is also one in 2044, if I'm playing the odds closely, but it will only be visible from a handful of northern states. All right. So I think a lot of this stuff is, basically this is the result of the moon passing between the sun and the earth, blocking all sunlight in a particular path. You've heard a lot about totality. You've heard a lot of percentage where it is a total eclipse of the heart, a total eclipse like Albany, my county of Washington and other places where it will be 96, 97, 98% of the sun, which will make it darker, but obviously will not make it dark as it would be if you were in totality. The temperatures will drop. Street lights may briefly flicker on, and birds and plants will even act unusually. The corona, or the sun's atmosphere, will be visible, tracing magnetic fields. Crescent-shaped rays of light can be spotted on the ground. You can also expect the sky to shine in other ways. Stars, planets, and even a comet will be visible during the total solar eclipse. Venus will be the brightest object, but sky watchers may also be able to point out Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars. Mercury will be visible, but will appear faint. People will also have a rare opportunity to faintly see Comet 12P, Pons-Brooks, which orbits the sun every 71 years. There is a slew of reasons why traveling to experience this is totally worth it, according to the Washington Post. And really, this sensational show, minus clouds, of course, this sensational show is something that is, for the most part, once in a lifetime. The eclipse will sweep across the U.S. from Texas to Maine. Major cities, Dallas, Little Rock, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Buffalo, and Burlington. The path of totality is about 115 miles wide, and over half of the country's population lives within 250 miles of it. If you're traveling for the eclipse, there is a guide for what to do in multiple cities, and there also, even if you don't live in the path of totality, as we do here in Albany, you can still expect at least some of the sun to be obscured by the moon. That amount will vary widely, depending where you are. And there are so many maps. I'm using one from the Washington Post, but there are so many maps online from scientific institutions, including NASA, that will tell you where you have to be when and how this will work out. And which is another way of saying, don't worry, there's a lot of coverage about the eclipse. There's a lot out there.
Plenty.
Yes, about it. And finally, before I throw this to our panel, millions of Americans are traveling into the path of totality. Be prepared for traffic delays and gridlock on major roads before and after eclipse. I will say this major roads thing, it's a lot of the concern in the Adirondacks is the not so major roads that have this huge amount of traffic that perhaps will be that people will be using. Some places have been planning for eclipse visitors for over a year, and New York has appointed an eclipse czar to maximize tourism while avoiding disaster. If I had known that, we would have talked to the eclipse czar. I think
they were disappointed over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah, I saw the headline maybe last Friday, and I was like, why do we have to have a czar?
And why is it a czar? Not like a, I don't know.
An overseer of the...
Or, yeah.
A sister. I don't know.
Expert. Priest or priestess of the sun.
Yeah, right. A supreme commander. Something like that. Yeah.
Czar.
It's always a czar.
Yeah.
Well, we have one. and that's to maximize tourism while avoiding disaster. what other concern officials are warning travelers to prepare for? Temporary cellular network disruptions, particularly in cities where lots of people are expected to be. And then there's the safety of it. For God's sakes, don't look at the sun. There are eclipse glasses. There are several groups, again, including NASA, that have lists of glasses that have been approved and are safe. There are many, 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 many companies that produce glasses that are not safe. So you probably want to check that out. Same thing with any gizmo that you could have gotten for your cell phone to take pictures of the solar eclipse. Those also, there are ones that are approved and ones that aren't approved. So you may just want to check that out. I know of one, like a local school district bought just a ton of glasses off Amazon and then were notified that none of them are any good.
No.
So, you know, that's an issue. So how excited are you, Mark?
Joe, I'm actually pretty happy. I remember back when I was a school kid in 79, there was an eclipse that at least covered part of the northern United States, partially covered the northern United States. I was in Minnesota at the time, and I remember all as kids trundling out to the parking lot with our two white paper plates, turning our backs and watching the show on the paper plate without the hole in it. And the fact that I remember that so vividly from so long ago, I think speaks to what a communal event this can be, which is a great thing, obviously, amongst our overly politicized, overly political world.
How old would you have been?
I was born in 67, so.
Oh, so we're exactly the same age. Yeah, you and I are the same age. So because I remember that too. They brought us out, and we had the little things, and they scare the hell out of you. You know, like if you look at the sun, you'll never see again, and it's gonna burn your eyeballs out. And but yes, it was a really big event.
I was at a Catholic school, so our fear was not the sun. If we turned our backs and looked. Our fear was the authorities.
Yes, exactly.
Now, interestingly, my son's school today reportedly, at least my son mentioned it, said that they weren't so confident that they could manage all the children, so they're sending them home at noon today, which tells you a little bit something about student management then versus now. But I think it'll be a great opportunity for families to do it with their kids, and I think you talked about the glasses. I've in the past ordered some from Amazon and then got a notice that they weren't valid. So even though I have some from Amazon in-house, I'm probably just going to use the two paper plate method. Because again, I remember that very vividly from 79. So it seems to suffice as a way to watch it.
And by all accounts, you know, it'd probably be another, as I mentioned, you know, another long stretch before we have this again. And if you say once in a lifetime or twice in a lifetime, it is really something to see.
And woke up today and said, you know, I wish I was a weatherman. And I said, why? This is George, who some listeners to this program may know.
Yes.
And I said, well, why do you want to be a weatherman today? And he said, well, because I'd love to do the forecast. It's going to be partly sunny, but a little moony.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Sorry.
Jim.
Yeah, I agree with Mark. I mean, I think in our polarized times, it's nice to have at least a day where people come together and are just in awe of the world around us and the solar system and the way that things work beyond our control and really stop and pay attention, but hopefully don't stop in the middle of the Northway or the Thruway and pay attention. I think it's also, you know, because Western New York and the North Country are in the path of totality, which is a great phrase, by the way. It's great for them. You know, the hotels are all sold out and there's a lot of excitement and it's just good for the area. And I know it creates traffic and creates concerns, but I think on balance, it's really a positive thing and people are getting excited about it. So, you know, to all our new listeners today who are newly in the area, welcome to upstate New York where the sun don't shine.
Welcome.
Ever.
Ever. Again, if you'd like to share with us what you're doing during the eclipse or what you make of it, we'd love to hear from you. Sarah.
I'm obsessed with the spiritual, mystic historical element of this. I'm deeply interested in what listeners are doing. My kids are going to be on top of a mountain in the Adirondacks with their dad, which is very cool. And I'll be at work, which is not as cool. But, you know, the I've been reading up on what solar eclipses have meant for the spiritual side of humanity. And it's a time for spiritual renewal, introspection, and shedding of old energies, among other things. And then if you get into the astrological energy piece of this, which not everybody's into, but there may be people out there who are interested. It's Aries season. And then there's this small planet, I think, called Chiron, which is involved in this eclipse, which it symbolizes sort of like your woundedness, your childhood, or it wouldn't have to necessarily be childhood wounds, but like your wounded healing. So I don't know. I'm a little obsessed with all that stuff that people might call woo-woo, but I think it's very cool and significant and might offer us all a little deeper place to connect during the eclipse.
Speaking of the wounded healing, Joe, I wonder if this makes the eclipse coming makes it more or less likely that the Phillies might win the World Series this year.
Yeah, I'm just hoping it doesn't screw up me passing a kidney stone.
Well, you get your priorities right.
Marjorie Taylor Greene said that between the earthquake and the eclipse, that this is God's way of telling us to repent and that we're being punished. I can understand the earthquake connection. I don't know exactly how an eclipse is punishing.
That sounds like a lot of shame. And
that's not the word I thought you were going to use.
Did you have your finger on the button?
You had me momentarily scared.
No, that's a lot of that. I mean, thank you, Marjorie Taylor Greene, for reminding us that this season is about stepping away from those patterns. Government should not be involved in just scaring the crap out of us. You know, Governor Hochul also issued a statement, I think this morning or maybe over the weekend, saying that people who are driving in the path of totality should pack snacks and water bottles in their cars in case everybody's in a gridlock for, I don't know, 12 hours at a time. And it just got me thinking about the role of government in that thin line between what's safe, which is what Governor Hochul's suggesting, and then scary and manipulative, which is how I would characterize Marjorie Taylor Greene.
You know, we'll go to a break here, but it just what I find interesting, and I about the traffic and the gridlock and all of that. So even if you're in totality, you can go anywhere and see it. It's not like you're going to an arena,
yeah,
or to at a store or at a fairground. Like you can go anywhere, and it seems like humans can sort of figure that out of where it is that they want to go and where they can go. Like it's a huge area.
I think that's maybe why people are freaking out the way that they are, because capitalism can't do anything.
Right. That's a great point.
Except sell fake sunglasses. But like, what else is capitalism going to do here?
Hotels.
We'll be right back after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We are talking about the solar eclipse 2024. I've asked folks, listeners, you all to write to us and give us a sense of what you make of it and how serious you're taking it, and any eclipse stories that you may have. We'll get to those in just a few minutes. By the way, we have a special program coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon with our Ian Pickus, our news director, and this program's producer, Sarah LeDuc, who will be doing a live program from Tupper Lake, and we'll be covering the eclipse. And so that'll be happening at 3 o'clock from 3 to 4 p.m. So you can watch and listen. And so it's like watching the eclipse with a color commentary. It'll be very cool.
Like Mystery Science Theater.
That's right. Exactly.
But for the solar eclipse.
So very cool. That's at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And those folks will be on, I think, Midday Magazine talking about that as well. Okay, so let me get to some of the letters. Georgia U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene warning that the eclipse is a sign of the apocalypse. I'm sorry, isn't she a sign of the apocalypse? <Very good. laughs> I wonder if a certain ex-president will be caught staring into the sun without glasses. These aren't the letters I had in mind, by the way. I thought they were going to be a little bit.
These are we say this different. Was a non-political event?
These are exactly the letters I had in mind.
Peter says, I chose to not travel for the eclipse, hoping my deck on Saratoga Lake will afford me a satisfying experience. I think being home will make it a special experience. I feel the exact same way. I think I'm just like going to go out my front lawn, the field in the front. I'm going to worry a little bit about the dog and go watch it. It seems like the best way to do it. I had we were home yesterday and without giving the address, we have a we live on the top of a hill and it overlooks three mountain ranges, major mountain ranges, and it's a beautiful, beautiful view. And yesterday, a car pulled up and they knocked on our door, and they said, "Would you mind tomorrow if we came and set up shop in your field to watch the eclipse?" And I had that momentary, I don't feel like I can make this decision alone. I was like, honey, do we mind if anybody comes in the field? And because I felt like it could have gone either way, you know?
Well, and, are you going to charge admission?
That's what we should do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we should do. I thought it was very nice of them to ask. That's very sweet. That's fine. All right. Let us go to, that was Peter, and we go to Kryon is the great teacher associated with Sagittarius. And is it Chiron? Chiron.
Maybe.
In Greek mythology, Chiron was held to be a superlative centaur amongst the brethren since he was called the wisest and justest of all the centaurs. So there.
Well, yeah, I was talking in astrological terms and not Greek mythology, which I understand is not quite splitting hairs, but very different paths.
Mitchell writes and says, state legislatures to decide personal decisions, not by an actual citizen vote like abortion. Now, let's put slavery on the ballot, purely an economic policy in an effort to reduce prices due to paying high wages using rose-colored eclipse glasses. And the topic of that email is Republicans' eclipse reason. That was the topic for that letter. If you have extra glasses, please send them to schools so kids in South America can have them for the next eclipse. There is a website online. It's kxan.com. in Austin, so that is something to keep in mind as well.
Or keep them for 2044.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember things I got for the holidays, where they are. I can't imagine 2044 remembering what I did.
Where are those things? Yeah.
Oh, no, they're in the file cabinet. Are they under glasses or eclipse? Lynn says, I'm sorry. If you've seen one eclipse, you've seen them all. Very jaded, but yeah. I understand it. I get it. Let's see. Heed the warning from the conspiracist science. So many millions of people will be taking pictures of the sun that the light will be sucked out of the sky and the sun won't come back.
Oh, boy.
Now, I once did an interview with someone who will remain nameless, but was a very large figure in the arts world. And we asked at the end of the interview if we could take a photo so we could put it on our website when we aired the story. And he said, no, because every time you take my picture, you take a portion of my soul. So this seems similar to that.
Sure. If you're a burning star.
Or if you have a soul.
Mm-hmm.
David writes, Dear Joe and panelist and panelist and panelist, I'll be observing my house cat because I've already observed a former eclipse, and it's her first. Okay. I won't send you video, but I vote for Rudy as being nuttier than Marjorie. He's suggesting the communist states of New York and California are responsible for the eclipse and the earthquake. I'll enjoy the eclipse from my local library. That's cool.
That's very cool.
You know, that reminds me that, when Governor Hochul was holding a press conference right after the earthquake, and she mentioned that the epicenter was west of New York City. And somebody said, that is the most New York way of referring to New Jersey.
Yes, very good point.
Well, if I were advocating for congestion pricing in Manhattan, that's how I'd refer to New Jersey right now as well. One thing, you talk about libraries, I would point people to the American Museum of Natural History has a short video explaining the eclipse. If you want to get a short primer for you or your kids, it's as almost everything they do is very well done.
And that's online.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Jim writes, morning. Trump says let states decide on abortion, but that abortion should be legal in cases of, does this have anything to do with the eclipse? I'll read it later on if, I don't know. It's eclipse glasses. Okay, I'll skip that one. let's see. Kitty writes, I'll be at Greenpoint Conservancy for the partial eclipse, which, according to a professor of astrophysics, will be quite underwhelming versus the total. But I wasn't willing to travel with the millions to the Adirondacks. Should be amazing, though, to witness the real thing. And that's from Kitty in Claverick. We go to Melinda, who just says, my information is that you should not store glasses because after 3 years they start to disintegrate. Yeah.
Unless they're temperature controlled.
Larry asks, why not watch it on a camera? You can. Go ahead.
But you still need the glasses.
Do you make the old-fashioned camera out of the box? I think that's what he's talking about. I'm pretty sure.
The box camera?
Yeah.
Because I know that the media has been getting out the message to people that, you know, don't think that if you're looking through a camera, you're somehow safe unless you have the glasses on.
That's right.
Why not watch it on a camera? Why not watch it with a fox? Why not watch it with a fox? Okay. Then we go to Helen. Don't leave out Carly Simon's You're So Vain. You took your Learjet to Nova Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun. Just wait. Just wait.
I never caught that lyric in that song.
We're getting a lot of music help here. Marjorie Taylor Royd Rage is a great argument in favor of increasing funding for education across the South. Lynn says, I read that one. How do we get Trump to stare at the sun during the eclipse with no eye protection? Well, he just did it last time. NASA was finally spot on. Glad they did not plan a moon landing for today. It would be so damn dark up there. Then we go to Tom, who writes... I'm so enjoying all this. Tom says, dear panel, to respond to your request for thoughts on the eclipse, I remember my first partial eclipse in Brooklyn around 1970. There were two more partials here in New York. The last one in 2017 was a lot of fun with my entire family. There won't be another for many years. Today's eclipse will probably be the last partial one I see before I shed my mortal coil and join the choir eternal. The eclipse helps me remember that every moment of our lives counts and that we have precious little time on this earth to do good. Nice message, Tom. Paul writes, this will be my third eclipse. I saw the one in 2017 and one in Buffalo in the 60s when I was a kid. We used two pieces of paper with a pinhole to view that one. The dark glasses are a great improvement. Then... Joe asks a question I don't know the answer to. I'm sure it can be Googled easily. But can you please clarify if it's safe to look down on your phone at the eclipse being recorded by your phone? My understanding was no, right? But your phone may vary. I don't know. I have to check.
No, what, Joe, I can only tell you what I've heard, which is that if you want to use a camera, you still have to have the film in front of your eyes or the camera that's in those eclipse glasses.
Matt says, I hope this isn't too late, but the person in charge of managing the eclipse response in New York should be called the Pharaoh in recognition of the culture we most associate with sun obsession. That's a great point,
very
Matthew.
Good.
Okay, at Joe's request, here's my eclipse story. I traveled from the Hudson Valley to Buffalo. I planned this trip a few months ago. My children attend college here, and I thought it would be nice to share it with them, and they weren't opposed to me crashing the on-campus party. However, a few weeks ago, I realized how out-of-hand things were expected to get, and knowing that my area would have about 95% totality, I considered canceling my plans. And then came spring break. One kid came home with mono and could not return to school until this weekend, long after the siblings. So now I sit in Buffalo on a very cloudy day, hoping to get some glimpse of the eclipse before beginning the anticipated very, very, very long trip home. At least I will be able to say I was there. All right, let's go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue with letters. We're talking about the solar eclipse taking place around 325 to 335 is the window, depending on different parts of our region and where you're viewing it from. And again, we'll have our coverage of it beginning at 3 o'clock here on WAMC with Ian Pickus and Sarah LaDuke. We welcome you to join in on our fun of telling us eclipse stories and your thoughts and what you make of it all. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from SAP Bush Hollow Farm. Meat CSA and Seasonal Cafe in Schoharie County, grass-fed and pasture-raised meats by the cut, whole, halves, and quarters or monthly subscriptions. sapbushfarmstore.com for orders. The Golden Notebook, presenting Jill Dearman interviewing Jennifer Bell, author of Swana in Love, Saturday, April 13th at 2 at Graveside Variety in Woodstock. GoldenNotebook.com for more info. And Albany Marriott, Wolf Road, Albany, New York, full-service hotel with flexible meeting space and features such as a restaurant, cocktail lounge, mobile check-in, and mobile key. AlbanyMarriott.com.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime.
All right, that kudos. They got right to it. That's good. Deke writes, we will watch the eclipse with friends on the lawn at our church in Saratoga Springs, a cosmic wonder, not a sign of apocalypse. Then we go to Allison, can't get much more blessed. I live in Peru. The 100% totality zone and minor miracle, there's no cloud cover on the radar. Just a few miles from my house via back roads, there is a remote public location on the top of a hill with great easterly views so that when I'm in darkness, I'll be able to see the mountains of Vermont still illuminated and then get dark as the moon moves onward. So I think that this Peru, Vermont.
There you go.
I was confused. I was taken for a moment. Yep. Peru, Vermont, which is north of Manchester Center, going up Route 7 before you get to the turnoff to the left going to Bromley and the turnoff to the right going to Stratton. All right. I'll be drinking a special Path of Totality IPA from Ausable Brewing Company and eating a moon pie provided by my baking neighbor. And if that wasn't enough, a week ago I saw the amazing Caitlin Clark and that fantastic Iowa team at the MVP Arena. It doesn't get much better. So blessed. I was driving yesterday, and a neighbor was on their porch, and they were working feverishly, and I was trying to figure out what they were doing, and they had boxes of Oreos, bags of Oreos, whatever, I don't know, package of Oreos. And what they were doing is they were twisting off the cookie, and then they did all the phases for a total eclipse, and it was really cool.
That's awesome.
It was cookie art. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Very, very cool. All right. Please make clear, looking at eclipse through binoculars or a telescope, even with the special lenses, is not safe without the special filter also on the device's lens. This was shown on a recent PBS Nova program about the eclipse. Imagine this is true of a camera or cell phone as well, though of that I'm not sure. I think really safe, even if you think you know what you're doing, I think you should go to one of the, there's the American Association of Scientists that has a really good website, and NASA that has a really good website, and just check everything out before you do it. If you have any question whatsoever, just I was looking at it last night because I wanted to make sure the glasses I had were safe because all the news coverage has scared me. But they do a really nice job sort of explaining this.
I'm going to be interested to see the compilation of stories tomorrow about people who didn't follow the advice on one thing or another. I'm suspecting there's going to be a whole line of them.
Eclipse is the Earth's way of taking back daylight saving time. It's its right. We just read that. My apologies. And I love My I love New York. Glasses say they expire in 3 years. I'm granting my kids and husband and driving across the closest border into totality somewhere nearish Syracuse. I'm not letting this opportunity go for once in a lifetime moment with my kids. That from Alyssa. Then we go to John. My nephew pointed his telescope at the sun, which burned through eclipse glasses and set the floor on fire.
Oh, boy. Warning.
Just if that happened in my house, I tell you, I would not be writing a letter right now.
Yeah.
I would still be deep in therapy. John says, can they predict with certainty that the next eclipse will be in 2079 as an exact time when the Earth's axis shifts slightly over time? Well, probably come close, but I think it's they were pretty close on this one. I mean, obviously things have changed even over the past couple of weeks as the path and the narrowness of totality. So, yeah.
I thought the next one was 2044, or he said 2079?
He said 2079. Okay. I've heard different things, and I think it depends on where you are. Like, so the one would be in the Northeast or versus, you know. I was about to write in and ask how I should wear my eclipse glasses with my eyeglasses. Then I went outside and tried it. The answer is eclipse glasses outside my glasses. Amazingly, I was able to figure this out without the panel's expertise. Happy to know I'm completely an old doofus. Okay. You're not. It's fine.
Be kind to yourself.
That's right. During today's eclipse, I'll be sitting in partial dark in my living room reading one of the many books I have found to read based upon Joe's interviews with various authors and books recommended by guests to the book show. I shall leave all scientific observations, insights, and revelations to those who know far, far more about solar eclipses than I, Russ. Well, thank you, Russ. That's very nice. You could do both. Joel says, don't send links. I'm sorry. But he sent a link from Wired, which has you can watch the eclipse in real time on your computer, which is obviously safe. And then...
I think I'd do that for sure. And then what is more observable, I think? There they are, the Oreo cookies. The
phase of the moon. For those of you at home, I'm showing a picture of cookies.
But I think the more observable phenomenon is what happens in nature. Instead of looking at the sun, watch the plants and listen to the animals. It's going to be creepy, I think. Because I think everybody's going to get real quiet. And I think that this is an opportunity to remember that we don't always have to stare at the thing. We can observe other things.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Anne says, I work a lot of concerts at a local theater, and sometimes I buy merch, such as pins and T-shirts from tours. I ordered tees for myself, my son, and sister from a famous T-shirt company. One of them looks like a concert tour shirt with the times and locations on the back of it. I debated driving to Louisville or somewhere in the Adirondacks, but I'm staying home. Remind people to look at the shadows as well during the eclipse, and that's from Anne. Then we check in with John. I think that's very similar to what I already wrote. The eclipse is wonderful, and I'm so happy that people are uniting in their interest in it. But allow me to offer 2 points of skepticism. I cannot count the number of FOMO, fear of missing out, inspiring think pieces I've read in the last few weeks with titles like How an Eclipse Changed My Life for the Better Forever. It's okay to see a partial or even no eclipse, and no one should feel bad for not seeing it. Secondly, we should always be aware of the power of the delicate confluence of the sun, moon, and earth, and they shouldn't have to do a party trick to get our respect and attention. If everyone thought about this every day, we truly would be a better place.
Party trick. Well, I like that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the letter writer, but I like a good party trick. I was really thrilled to be in the earthquake last Friday. Our house, I call it the Hobbit House. It's pretty well embedded into a hillside. And we got a good rumble, which I'd never had in my life. I was happy to get it and happy to check it off the list without any harm being done. So I'm all for party tricks.
You know, it was so weird because we were in the studio when the earthquake happened. Everyone in the outside of the building felt it, but here, just so you all know, as panelists, safe.
This is the safe
nothing,
room.
Nothing. We didn't feel a thing.
Interesting.
Or maybe it just always feels like an earthquake in here. I don't know. one of the two. Richard is writing us from the road safely, traveling north until we can't go any further. Hopeful destination, Burlington, Vermont. That is from Dick. Then we go to Sarah. Hey, I took the day off. Jumped in my car this morning with my dog. We're from Williamstown, and I'm driving north until I reach a town that has no clouds. Newport, Vermont, perhaps. I have no idea why this has become so important to me, but I'm making every effort to see totality. Perhaps yes. It's because I'm approaching 60 and feeling like I don't want to miss a thing, taking nothing for granted at this moment. Very nice, Sarah. Good luck. Safe travels. Be well. I wouldn't normally care about the eclipse, writes Earl, having viewed a few times in the past, but this year I am a bit concerned because a family of Aztecs has moved in next door and they're building a pyramid out of patio blocks. What the hell?
What is
all right.
happening?
I'm wearing red and green to experience. By the way, Sarah, who usually does triage on the letters, is doing the broadcast at 3 o'clock.
Top of the lake, yeah.
So I'm on my own and on going through the letters raw and unexpurgated. So I'm
hearing the triage in real time.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You just once you see like an odd word, you're like, oh, I won't read that. We decided to work from home at our country farmhouse an extra day to watch the eclipse from the field in the back. Back to Boston tomorrow. Then, like ancient cultures, I will hide and pray fervently that the sun reappears. Then, I work for an optometrist. And she said the glasses must be ISO compliant. She laughed that Stewart's is selling glasses for $1.99. Well, I know nothing about the safety of the Stewart's glasses. I will say that I didn't buy the $1.99 glasses because I was worried because they were so cheap. and then I found like $9 glasses and I felt better. And those were like officially sanctioned. And I felt, okay, that's good. Two more letters. The fact that we have only one moon and then its projection exactly matches the sun size is probably the reason we believe in heaven and hell, yin and yang, Republican and Democratic, et cetera, et cetera. Basically binary thought. It is our basic dilemma. That's a very thoughtful letter. And finally, from Kurt, my first car was a Honda Prelude. My second car was a Mitsubishi Eclipse. Yes, I had a Prelude to an Eclipse. On that note, we'll go to news with Ray Graff. Soak up the sun, soak up the darkness. It could all happen today. Dreams coming true. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. It is the 8th day of April. It is Total Solar Eclipse Day, or partial solar eclipse tank, depending on where you live, and make your way to watch or not. We've spent the last hour or so talking with people and reading letters with their stories. What I'd like to do is just do our half-hour segment here, 25 minutes or so, of talking about the news of the day, and then at when we come back from the 10:30 break, we'll finish up on some letters, and I also would like to talk about the other big seismic event that took place over the weekend, and that was the NCAA women's basketball game. So that's our plan for the next little bit, so we'll get to it. First item up for bids is actually a story that I didn't put on our docket, but I find it interesting. And that is President Biden, and this is on student debt. The president unveiled a new set of plans today that would eliminate student debt for millions of Americans. The administration says that if fully implemented, it would bring the number of borrowers who've seen some or all of their debt forgiven during the president's term to more than 30 million. The new plan, aiming to supplant an earlier version that was rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court in June, offers targeted relief to specific groups of borrowers, notably those who've carried debt for many years and those struggling to make payments. And many borrowers, regardless of income, could see relief from high interest rates. The U.S. Education Secretary said the new proposal will fulfill a promise the president made while a candidate in 2020. The relief offered, he added, will mean breathing room for many borrowers. It means freedom from feeling like your student loan bills compete with basic needs like groceries or health care. The announcement spelled out efforts aimed at four groups of borrowers: those who owe more money than they did at the start of their repayment, borrowers who started paying more than 20 years ago, those already eligible for existing loan forgiveness or discharge programs but haven't yet applied, and borrowers facing economic hardship. Sarah.
Well, I've been paying some student loans for about 20 years now, so that's exciting. I think it's exciting for lots of people. And although our education system, our higher education system, needs and is paying attention to tuition costs, which also are a driver of high student loan debt, and while banks are hopefully rethinking their lending procedures and processes, I don't see anything wrong with making right for as many Americans as possible the predatory lending system that some were swept up in, either because they were first-generation college attendees or higher education pursuers and didn't have access to information or other sources of funding, or whether, you know, it was just what they had available to them at the time and at the institution that they attended. We bail companies out all the time. We just call it tax policy, or it's explicit, like the auto industry or banks that are quote unquote too big to fail. And I think that there's nothing that could be categorized as too big to fail more aptly than the future of these students or graduates' professional careers, because it can really weigh people down in terms of the decisions that they make for the long haul about what they can contribute back with their degrees. So, you know, call me a millennial, even though I'm not. I'm Gen X. I have debt like a millennial. So, you know, I'm definitely in that category of people that's like, even if all of my student loans aren't forgiven, I'm still happy for the folks who are able to get out from under this pretty intense constraint on their future choices in life.
Jim?
Well, this news comes out just at the same time that universities are setting their prices for the coming year, and Vanderbilt University is going to be very close to topping $100,000 for an annual cost of attendance, and several others are right behind. So, Sarah, I'm not sure that universities across the board are doing a good job of controlling cost of attendance. Now, people in higher ed will be very quick to say, well, you know, so many people don't really pay that full amount, and it's really this, and this many people get scholarships. But once you have to go deep and explain it, it really gets lost. And that figure that comes up when somebody opens a website for Vanderbilt or whatever institution and they see that really astronomical figure, I think it does more than symbolize. It's a tangible evidence of a system that has benefited from, you know, the guardrails being taken off for a long time. The prices have been gone up way, way, way beyond the rate of inflation over the last few decades. And at the same time, the student debt burden has gone way up as well. And so I do think that the administration is both playing politics here. This is an election year. But at the same time, getting at this issue of really a higher education debt bubble. But the costs continue to spiral. And I would say at the same time, for public institutions, we have seen over the last several decades, particularly the last 20 years, states across the U.S. generally disinvesting from their public systems of higher education. So the cost of attendance for students has gone up a lot. The state investment has gone down a lot, and the student debt burden has gone up a lot. So I would like to see a more systemic look at this and say, let's look at what's driving this issue. And, you know, I think the letting students off the hook for the burden that they have accumulated may be one piece of it, but I think it's a small piece of a much deeper problem. And I also think there is definitely going to be a political backlash to this for the Biden campaign as well.
Mark Whitman.
Well, there are always party favors at a party, and the Democrats are handing out party favors, which I realize is part of politics. So just a couple of rough statistics. Sarah, I don't doubt that there are Americans who are still burdened by private debt, but about 90% of the student debt, actually in excess of 90% of the student debt outstanding in the United States, is owed to the government. So primarily when you hear the administration talk about this, they're talking about relieving debt obligations that are owed to the government. I don't like the fact that the administration is once again playing a little loose and fast with the powers of the executive and hoping that the courts sign on. And the reason I don't like that, and I'm a little bit surprised the Democrats are still pushing it, is because during the next administration, I don't want, if it's not a Democratic administration, I don't want them playing loose and fast with the powers of the executive and hoping or not hoping that the courts catch up to them. So I think that part of it, that the Biden administration has sort of decided to affect this largesse by pushing the envelope on what's legally permitted, I think is a really dubious strategy. I'm surprised that politicians haven't countered it with the same argument that they used to say, hey, we don't want to repeal the filibuster because that one could come back to bite us. I do entirely. Oh, another statistic worthwhile is, in terms of sort of name brand or notable colleges and universities, it is less than 40% of students who pay sticker price. Now, there's an economic disequilibrium about the power that colleges have, because when you and your child walk up to a college and say, we'd like to go here, we're not sure we can afford it, they say, well, why don't you just show us all your financials, and in some cases even the financials of your grandparents, mm-hmm. and we'll decide exactly how much you could pay. Now, if you went to a car dealership and they determined the price of your car that way, you would walk away because it's unfair. So a lot needs to be done to make the power of the consumer and the goods provider, in this case the college and the student, more equal. We've always thought that colleges and universities, we've sort of given them a pass. I think because we see them as these paternalistic organizations that have the advancement of humankind in mind. But they're also economic institutions. We don't treat them enough like that. We don't give students and their parents enough information to be smart consumers when they decide how much they are going to pay for college. We don't help them sort of look into the future, given their interests and proclivities, and decide, given what my possible career path is going to be, what makes sense in terms of how much debt should I take on, and is it going to be worth it for me economically or otherwise to pay this much money?
And so, Mark, can I just say something, please, about the sticker price versus what people really pay? Also, the sticker price is not a minor thing. I used to oversee in the Middle East a program that the State Department runs called Education USA. They run it around the world. And this is the program that promotes American higher education around the world for public diplomacy reasons, but also, as you're saying, Mark, for commercial reasons. We want people to come to the U.S. and attend our colleges and spend their money when they're here for 4 years or in graduate school, whatever. Students around the world, often very, very bright students who we would want to attend our institutions, they and their parents open up those web pages, they see that amount, and they close it, and they never look at it again. Or they'll listen to somebody like me who will try to convince them to show all their financial data, which, number one, they find to be very intrusive and an invasion of their privacy. But secondly, they are unable to bureaucratically navigate it. And that you know, the difficulties with the financial aid system, the financial aid forms have been disastrous this year, the new FAFSA, that this has really been a major disincentive for students who would otherwise qualify to go to the most competitive universities in the country, and they simply can't make it past that initial asking price and the bureaucratic nature of the financial aid system. It's a huge problem.
I do want to say, though, and those you raise some important points, but the Trump administration really pushed the envelope almost every other day on what the executive could do around the judiciary and pushing people, you know, pushing the boundaries of what's possible in the executive. That's how the Administrative Procedure Act ended up becoming the hero of 2016 to 2020, right? Because people were suing the Trump administration nonstop over it, the overreach, you know. So I don't see this as rising to a level that's, you know, further along in terms of concern about overreach by the executive than anything the Trump administration did. And then secondly, I think it's very different, you know, something like filibuster power in Congress is very different than a one-time student loan forgiveness, right? You know, I don't see this setting a precedent for years and years and years to come, or sort of permanently altering the way that government works in the United States. So, you know, I the other points that you raised are really important ones, and I'm glad that we're having a conversation about how higher education works and how what regulatory interventions might be necessary in order to get things under control here. But in the short term, you have young people and people who are trying to strive at like the height of their professional, you know, capacity or the arc, you know, the highest point of their professional arc, and to be weighed down by a debt held by your own government, because you're right, Mark, it's these loans, it's not private banks that will be forgiving the debt. It's only the government issued loans, because that's only the only loans that the executive has control over at this point, right? So I'm still paying on my private bank loans and will be for the foreseeable future. And that's okay. I think that in the short term, this is a really good strategy that makes a lot of sense for a lot of young professionals in the country.
All right. Anybody else on that? Okay. Let's go to another story. And this should probably bring us up to the bottom of the hour, and we'll take a break at that time. This is sort of an excuse to talk about immigration and where we are right now, and about the issue of immigration as an election issue in 2024. And former President Donald Trump, speaking at a multi-million dollar fundraiser on Saturday night, lamented that people were not immigrating to the United States from, quote, nice countries like Denmark, and suggested that his well-heeled dinner companions were temporarily safe from undocumented immigrants nearby, according to an attendee. Mr. Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, made the comments during a roughly 45-minute presentation at a dinner at a mansion owned by the billionaire financier John Paulson in Palm Beach, Florida, a rarefied island community. So we talked about this a lot last week, of how much of these little Trump tantrums do you pay attention to and talk about, and low-hanging fruit and the like. But I just want to broaden it out a little bit and talk about, because Democrats are going to make abortion their big issue probably, and Republicans are going to make immigration their big issue. And things like this, where you're talking about quote-unquote nice countries and we're on an island and you're safe, is that going to – that's the message, right?
It's all about fear. And I don't know what it is about Denmark that neutralizes that fear. Actually, yes, I do. You know, what he's saying is white Europeans.
Right.
Predominantly. Not that there aren't other types of people who live in Denmark and who are citizens of Denmark, but that's the code, right? Is we want more professionals. This is not new. This rhetoric isn't new. It's not unique to Donald Trump. It's pretty widespread because we think about what we have and then we think about who deserves what we have. And then it breaks down to lots of scholars, really bright people have written about this idea of our immigration laws really being focused on tiers of status and preferencing certain characteristics. That's why we prioritize employment-based visas. That's why we prioritize that, and that's why we exclude entire groups of individuals who are in the out group. There's in groups and out groups at any point of time. And if you want to figure out which are where, you just look at the immigration system because it's pretty clear. It's like very explicit, baked in to our immigration system, who we welcome. There are visas called extraordinary ability visas. So like if you're not white and European, but you can do something very cool, very well, like a concert pianist, or I worked on a case for a bullfighter who was looking for an extraordinary ability visa, then you can prove your worth to be in the United States.
Full-time job, bullfighter?
Full-time job.
That's cool.
You know, one of the other visas that we prioritize are student visas. Mm-hmm. And it has been the case for a long time that if you're accepted at a university and you can demonstrate that through scholarships, financial aid, or your own means, you can get in, you're highly likely to get a student visa. Our universities want that to happen. Everybody involved wants it to happen. But I can tell you, when there's rhetoric like what we're hearing from the former president and more, it makes it very, very difficult to convince people to come to this country and study in this country. And we are losing a lot of highly qualified students who want to come here and in many cases can pay. And they're going to Canada and Australia and New Zealand. So the ripple effects of this are beyond kind of the immediate political issue of the day.
Mark?
I actually see Dana Milbrook had a great piece in the Washington Post talking about how Trump's rhetoric around immigration is a swindle, not dissimilar in many ways from what he's done economically throughout his career and recently with his social media company. And I'd encourage people to read it. I took away from that this is so much about race. I'm not even sure it's about immigration. When Trump says things like illegal alien criminals crawling through your windows and ransacking your drawers, they were here to, quote, loot the jewelry. I mean, I don't think he's referring to, I don't think he's talking to people's fears in Connecticut that people from the southern border are going to be in their jewelry drawers. I think he's talking to people's fears in Wisconsin about others being in their jewelry drawers when they're not home. And I think we need to fully realize what he has done since he came down the escalator and what he's doing now. And I think we need to more fully realize that what he talks about on immigration is far more about race. And the mm-hmm. significance of that is important because no matter what it is, we adjust or don't adjust our immigration policy, we are still left with the side effects of this terrible vitriolic language that affects so many. And to me, even more so than on immigration, that's the damage that this man is doing and frankly being allowed to do in our country. I read the Milbrook story at the Washington Post, I became very uncomfortable with the whole thing. It really makes me sad to hear that we've let this man and his party run roughshod about the way we think about race in this country.
I mean, it's the same reason that he questioned Barack Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah, and when he was president, he had the power at least to give a run at, for instance, reversing the DACA mm-hmm. policy. And he didn't. And I guarantee you there's no way that he's going to change the fact, or he's going to so sap our country of immigrants that it will become an economic detriment to his supporters, his wealthy supporters who need immigrants in various industries in this country. So my point being, he's going to rot a lot of hell on our immigration system, but I think what he's done for everyone in this country, and Dana Milbrook makes the point in her article, which I think we should all think about, is when he cheats you on Trump sneakers, he's taking money out of your wallet. But what he's doing when he talks about immigration is detracting from our souls, the whole soul of potentially, you know, not if not everyone, so many in this country. And it has such a deleterious effect on those of us who don't look like we're from Finland. And that effect will last, sadly enough, whether or not this man ever takes the White House.
Yeah, and he did go after DACA. That was the first issue that we all ran to the streets in 2016 about, and it was the Administrative Procedure Act, the APA, and judicial interventions that stopped that.
Okay.
We'll pause there. We'll finish up on the other side of a news break from the BBC. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this short break. Eclipse Monday, and welcome. It is it's 34 minutes past 10 o'clock on this 8th day of April. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for being a part of the roundtable panel. We have a terrific group, Jim Ketterer, Sarah Rogerson, and Mark Whitman. We've been discussing a bunch of things. We spent a good long time talking about the clips, and people are still sending us letters, and I'll share more of those in just a few minutes. I think it's people are having fun telling us what their stories are. So there are so many of them that I would like to get to some more of them. And maybe while we had a little brief foray into reality a few moments ago, it's nice that we can have a show that is largely about things non-political and our different little diversion, and that's kind of nice. And one of the cool things that happened yesterday was the women's NCAA basketball tournament that took place in Cleveland, Ohio. South Carolina topped Iowa to claim the national championship, and they were undefeated going into that game, and they came out undefeated. And of course, the other big story was Caitlin Clark, who played for Iowa and single-handedly seems to be running up a mountain with the boulder that is women's basketball and putting it at the top. You want to talk about an eclipse. Women's basketball has almost fully eclipsed the interest in men's basketball. The final game in the men's basketball season is tonight, Purdue versus
Connecticut.
Thank you, UConn. And so I just think it's really interesting and really fun. And it was the weirdest reaction. I have a connection to South Carolina, so I had been rooting for them all along. And then, but it's hard to root against Caitlin Clark. I felt very conflicted yesterday watching the game because, I mean, it was just fantastic. And it was so, so cool.
Well, everybody I know who went to the Iowa LSU game that was here in Albany was just blown away by the athleticism, the spectacle of it all, in the way that a lot of people are swept up in men's sports. And so it is very exciting to see that. And then with the launch of the, we have a hockey family, but the Professional Women's Hockey League, the PWHL, was launched this year as well. So now we have a professional hockey league for women. There's, of course, been a professional basketball league for women for quite some time, the WNBA, which is, as far as I know, continues to gain in popularity year after year after year. And women's soccer has been getting a lot of headlines with Rapinoe and others raising the issue of equal pay for women. And so sports has become an arena. I know that we're trying to not talk about political things, but there's nothing when it comes to gender that isn't political.
And this I think it flows from the success of Title IX.
Yeah.
You know, it was phased in over time in the 70s. It was initially signed by Richard Nixon in 72, the act. And, you know, it was in the later 70s that things really got going. And, you know, all the things that you were just ticking off, Sarah, I think are a direct result of the slow but steady implementation of a fair approach to sports. And I think it's great. And, you know, South Carolina having an undefeated season, I think we should also mention that on the Division III level, New York University ran the table. They also were undefeated. They won the championship. The coach is from around here. She's from Hoosick Falls. And it was a great year for women's basketball in New York. Columbia also won the Ivy League regular season championship. They went to the NCAAs, I think, for the first time ever. One of their players was just drafted into the Women's Professional League. You know, it's really astounding, but it also started with, you know, the wheels of government getting moving in a positive direction. So for all the things that, you know, we can come up with about government not getting right, I think this is one of the things that they did get right.
And, I mean, the entire tournament was sold out, and the viewership has been through the roof, unbelievable. I don't think we have numbers yet for yesterday's game, but I think the game before was Friday's game was, I think, 15 million, something like that.
Yeah, and more than, I think, it was the
14.2 million.
Yeah, the largest viewership for any game that ESPN's ever shown, men or women's.
Right, and I think that's that says a lot. And you had so many storylines. I mean, obviously you had Caitlin Clark, which is an amazing storyline. You had the South Carolina Gamecocks, who were undefeated and have, I'm sorry, one of the coolest coaches.
Yeah.
I mean, man. And the remark she made about Caitlin Clark, I don't know, just brought me to tears. It was really beautiful. And she was also talking about, you know, the role of a coach of working not only with the student but working with the family and working as a whole and letting the kids kind of do what they need to do but also shepherding them as much as possible. And it's such a different message than, you know, we got to get them out there, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to win, we got to win, we got to win. And it was very different and very refreshing. Mark.
Well, I was happy to see the success of women's basketball at the collegiate level over the weekend. I watched part of the game on Friday or Saturday, but I did not watch the championship. I'd also say it's a one thing. Hopefully men's sports can learn a thing or two from women's sports, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. The stardom of Caitlin Clark and others notwithstanding, I think particularly at the college level, the women's game is a lot more interesting than the men's game. And my son and I have gone to Marist games of either type. And typically, though, my son prefers the women's game because they play more like a team. And frankly, if you're going to try and be a singular star and you're not Kobe Bryant, it's kind of not worth seeing the discount version. But to see a team work in unison is something that you don't often see even in men's basketball. And also, when you talk about hockey, what a beautiful game hockey is, and it's too bad that it's the men's game is still beset by so much violence, not only dropping your gloves, but just the risks of CTE given the rules. And I think hockey will benefit from seeing the continued success of the women's game and realizing that as the men think responsibly about CTE more and the league thinks about CTE more, that there'll be an example they can more closely emulate that allows them to continue the game without so violently jeopardizing the health of so many of the participants.
It is, yeah, it seems like we're kind of coming to our senses in some way, maybe.
Yeah, literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively. And a point where I don't know. I hope it stays this way. Okay, but I was worried, you know, as you see it. I was at the tournament here in Albany, and you're like, okay, this is perfect. This is great. This is amazing. God, I hope they don't screw it up.
Why are they going to ruin it?
You know, how are they going to ruin it? And it's going to be money, and it's going to be, you know, unfortunately, maybe not putting the tournament in places like Albany. And But just to have the final in Cleveland, like, that's so cool. And I just I hope that continues, and I hope that it still has, you know, this huge following, but one that isn't as regimented and corporatized as men's basketball has been for many years.
I have hope, not only because of my son's decision vis-a-vis the Marist men's and women's team, but also currently he could probably name two or three of the women's players in college basketball. I don't think he could name a single men's college basketball player at this juncture.
No, I agree. No, and this, and you have two number one seeds. They're going up against each other, and you know, it'll be what it is. And I don't, maybe I'll watch. I don't know.
I'm very hopeful, but have a healthy skepticism that our tradition of rugged individual capitalist achievement might be displaced and replaced by a more communal cooperative notion of sport. That would be awesome. I would love to see that play out.
How do we do that?
I think by doing what we're doing now and centering the aspects of sport that support that future vision of a collaborative, or the current vision,
because it
which happens to be in women's sports for reasons I can't name right now.
Well, but you're absolutely right, and it's and I don't, you don't have to name them because then we know what they are. I mean, it's team, it's working as a team, it's a common goal, it's having great coaches, it's having a great coaching, and I mean, there's certainly money in the NCAA women's tournament too, but it doesn't seem to have factored in, and has been as diluting as it has been on the men's
but
side.
But I think one thing that is a real challenge for college sports, men and women now, is the presence everywhere of major gambling.
Yeah.
And that as the women's game continues to increase its profile, the challenge will be there too. No one is going to escape this. And it seems like sports in general has just, rather than trying to keep gambling at arm's length, they've now embraced it. And that's a major danger,
right.
I think.
I mean, besides the fact that you can do it from your seat on your phone, many arenas have parlors within the facilities where you can go in and place sports betting. I thought it was odd that the NCAA was more worried about betting on individual players than they were about overall betting. I think I would have been worried about all of it.
Yeah, people betting not just on the outcome of the game, but, you know, how many points will one player get, how many rebounds, how many points per quarter. You know, everything is up for grabs in the gambling game, and it's just inevitable that it's going to lead to the kind of disasters that you saw in the 50s and 60s and I think the 70s of point shaving scandals in the NCAA.
Well, and you have these wake-up calls like the Otani incident in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And we still don't really – we haven't gotten to the bottom of that. But it's really easy to bet a lot of money and to lose a lot of money.
When you are dealing with addiction and you don't have proper guardrails, you will inevitably end up in the ditch. And that's where sports and sports betting is going before this is done.
But how do you turn it around? I mean, like
government intervention, which no one really.
But we shouldn't
have
done it in the first place, right? Mm.
Well, that's probably true about a lot of social media, but here we are.
I mean, just like when you grow up your entire life, and I know we vary in ages, but not a lot. You know, you grow up and you don't do drugs. Okay. Now it's not illegal, and then and you're not allowed to bet. Now you can. next stop, prostitution. Like, I don't get it.
Sex work.
Right. Sex work. And I'm just, which through sites, you know, like OnlyFans and other things, I mean, that's happening too. So I don't know. It's a very strange road that we're going down that you wonder how you turn it around at any point. Or do we just crash and burn first?
Well, we'll crash and burn, and then we'll have to decide what the guardrails look like we may be past the point of prohibition in much of this. But we'll see.
We should end on a high note.
I was going to say, we started off by saying that we should keep it as a good show, and now I'm talking about crashing and burning. The solar eclipse will take place this afternoon. We'll be covering it live here on WAMC beginning at 3 o'clock, a special at from 3 to 4 p.m. Sarah LaDuc, Ian Pickus, already stationed in the Adirondacks, ready to go, and we look forward to that program and obviously coverage throughout the day. Mark Whitman, Jim Ketterer, and Sarah Rogerson, thank you for a very fun show. I appreciate it. We'll be right back.